Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. During and following the Great Recession of 2009-2010, the Congress moved in the Dodd-Frank legislation to create the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, known as the CFPB. Most recently here, the Fifth Circuit in 2022 has ruled that the creation of the CFPB was unacceptable and unprecedented, with the word used, because of its funding. The funding is critical to the centerpiece of a conversation that Richard Epstein has with the Supreme Court past, the Supreme Court present, Supreme Court future, about the creation of something unprecedented, as the Fifth Circuit said. That is an entity of government that is not beholden to the U.S. Congress in any fashion that we can see because of its funding. Richard, a very good evening to you. The Fifth Circuit said unprecedented, and now the CFPB is looking to be blessed by the Supreme Court in a recent decision. What is the mechanism that is at the heart of this controversy? Good evening to you.
Yes, there's a big question. It says every appropriation must begin with an appropriation from Congress. What happened in this particular case is that the Congress of the United States essentially said, we are hereby authorized the following kind of an appropriation. We are not giving you any direct money. What we're instructing the Federal Reserve Bureau, or Federal Reserve, to do is to take some fraction of the revenues that it says and to set them aside. And these revenues will then be appropriated to this particular agency. And the only condition that you need to do is to see that the head of the CFPB has said that I need this amount of money in order to run my particular operations. And so what happens is it's a kind of a necessary condition that you have in this particular case, that there be some overall appropriation that takes place from the Congress, but that the actual amounts that are determined in any way, shape, or form are not determined by it at all. It's rather determined by the unilateral request of this particular person and a highly partisan bureau, which is designed to protect what they regard as consumer welfare under circumstances where it's not at all clear that they're doing anything of that sort. That board has been subject to all sorts of very strong criticism by all sorts of people for being vindictive and for working much too hard against all sorts of decent things. So you don't have any particular confidence about how this thing is going to be operated. And so the Fifth Circuit, you know, they looked at this thing and they said, we've never seen anything like this in our lives. And to some extent, they're taking an originalist practice, which certainly does have some degree of flexibility in the way in which you do these things. But what happened in this particular case is the flexibility that you see under the earlier statutes are really very different from the ones that you're seeing here. It was always a case in which when you make an appropriation to a particular branch of government, it's up to a particular amount of cap. But it doesn't follow that what you have to do is to spend every dime that you receive if you can achieve your mission with that. And so what happens is often the amount of money that is allocated is not spent by the particular agency. And this is something which is always a problem with respect to appropriations. You have discretionary functions for which it's impossible to give a precise dollar figure at the time once it starts. But then you ask yourself, if it turns out that the president has the power to turn down some particular money that he no longer needs, it's not a case in which you're seeing aggrandizement of the executive over the other branches of government if they take less. In this particular case, it's exactly the opposite. What happens is, given the fact that the head of the CFPB is completely insulated from charges, all she has to do is to make a request for the money, and it's hers. And so the original appropriation was a kind of a but-for cause. That is, without it being made, you could have never had it. But the actual appropriations is being made by the department head to herself. And this, it seems, to the Fifth Circuit and to Richard Epstein as being a real abuse of the situation, because it means that what happens is there's no congressional check whatsoever on how it worked. This is moreover compounded with the situation about how that person is appointed. This is not an agency with a commission, five people, three from one party, two from another. There's a single person who runs this particular operation and has a term of 5 years so that he or she can outlast the existing president, what's going on. There is a removal provision that often allows for cause, and the definitions for inefficiency. That's a very funny word, because it certainly doesn't mean inefficiency in the common sense, at which point you could never fund this agency. Neglect of duty or malfeasance in office. A standard which essentially is almost never satisfied, and the procedures for removing are every bit as open. So this was an effort essentially to create this watchdog commission, which operates free and clear of any system of separation of powers, any system of checks and balances that you could cut to imagine. And when it came out, I said to myself, this thing has to be ripe for the picking. There's no precedent whatsoever for anything like this. There are always going to be ambiguities associated with the operation of the appropriations clause. But this case is so far removed from the area of genuine ambiguity that it should have been struck down. And so I was really quite amazed to see that it came out this way by Justice Thomas and Justice Kagan on an originalist basis. Now, I don't understand what originalism means. If it turns out that you have a practice which was never attempted in the first 200 odd years of the Constitution, to say that it's something that the early people wanted. And the only thing that they could say is, well, we always allow some degree of discretion with respect to the appropriations and the cause. Well, that's fine, but it doesn't mean that you have this degree of appropriation, this degree of discretion. And so what they do is they say, well, since it turned out you could do some things that weren't perfectly obvious from the text of the clause, you can do anything that you want to do. When you read all of these things, you have to read them in sense, right? And how they work. So let's go back one
bit. Wait just a moment, Richard. Sure. What you're building is a case in the 21st century, but your article makes it very clear this was addressed in the 19th century by the very famous Justice Joseph Story. You cite that. And I want to go to history here, because I'm flabbergasted that the plain language of Justice Story's commentaries on the Constitution of the United States from 1833, which have been heed to by all the justices and the courts ever since, to my understanding. You teach me very well, Professor. Justice Story wrote in 1833, Congress should possess the power to decide how and when any money should be applied for public purposes. Read it again. Congress should possess the power to decide how and when any money should be applied for public purposes. Now, how do you interpret that so that you can bypass Congress and not be beholden to oversight?
To me, it's utterly crazy. It says Congress should have the power to decide. It doesn't say that Congress should have the power to delegate that decision to an independent person who can draw from an available stock of funds without any question whatsoever. What he meant about this is that if you look at that clause, if it's a direct appropriation by Congress, there is, in fact, a real question of what the words how and when mean in that particular sentence that you quoted. If, in fact, you can say, I'm going to make an appropriation today that is going to take effect 20 years from now, it seems to me that's just not what is going on in these particular cases. They really have a much more narrow definition. Now, there's only one period in the Constitution where they say you could make allowances for 2 years, and that's with respect to the provision of an army. And everything else is left blank. The standard provision in virtually every document that you ever see is that you're talking about annual appropriations. And, you know, how and when, if within the year, I think you could give it. But to say that you're going to read that phrase when there's not the slightest bit of historical evidence of any practice to that effect, that you can make an appropriation today to take place 10 years later when there's another Congress in effect, that seems crazy to me. Look, this is a very serious problem, and it's also highlighted by Joe Biden and executive orders. by and large, what you do with an executive order is the ones that should have some degree of durability are those which are technical matters, telling how you file papers or present a particular case to one body or another, but don't make any substantive claims on what should be done. Now, when you see somebody today existing an executive order as a president, so how many vehicles of a given kind should be on the road in 2035, to my mind, that's absolutely off limits. That the only thing you're allowed to do is to saturate the standards that you want so long as your particular term of the presidency lasts. And after that, it's for somebody else to decide. And indeed, if Biden can do this, then every president after him can do the same thing. And so you get a Trump order which says up to 2040 now, we will know nothing whatsoever in order to help advance the growth of electronic vehicles and so forth. And you can't have rival executive orders going up and down. If you want to do something of longer duration on the substance, it must be legislation that gets you to that.
So how does Justice Thomas from the Republicans and Justice Kagan from the Democrats, how do they read that story, quote, in a way that permits the CFPB to be private, where you'd say its funding is non-transparent?
I mean, what they do is they said, well, we had some discreet earlier on with respect to the way in which these various situations run, in which you could allow for appropriations in sums not exceeding a certain particular topic. And that's certainly true for the reasons that I just mentioned. But it doesn't create this other arrangements. If you recall what it says in the original thing, it says no expenditure should be made except in consequence of an appropriation made by law. Well, this thing is not a consequence of an appropriation made by law. It's in consequence of a request by somebody who's way down in the hierarchy and not part of the situation. So I would treat this as a completely illicit form of subdelegation to somebody who doesn't have the power to make appropriation. Because what happens, all the Congress says is there's going to be money available to you. You then decide how much you want. So the decision maker is not Congress at this point. It turns out to be the head of the CFPB. And this is all way off range. I also give another illustration in this particular paper about how it is that you do public utility accounting. And it's exactly the same issue. These boroughs have to figure out how you do investments and all sorts of things and major stuff. And the question then is, how do you do it? And there's a great temptation to say, well, you don't have to balance the books in one year because you could always make it up in the next. But back in the 1920s, when people really cared about this issue, in a case involving New York, what was held under the circumstances is you have to balance your books on an annual basis. Because if you don't do that, taking into account depreciation and everything else, you could put yourself into a doom loop by saying, look, what we're going to do is run short this particular year on the amount of money that we're giving to the public utility, but they can make it up by an appropriation in the next year. And the next year comes along and they do exactly the same thing. And by the time you're done, you have a huge mountain of debt that the utility has to face and no possible way of raising the particular money. So what you have to do is to make sure that the books are clear every year, just the way on the stock market, when business closes, if there's any disputed out of them, trade or whatever it is, you have to resolve it before the next morning so people know their positions when they start the trade again on the next
Richard,
day.
Richard, your column ends on a positive note saying that Congress can fix this. Is that correct?
Yes. What they could do is they could basically rewrite the statute. It's been tried several times and it's failed thus far. And what you could do is imagine this bureau is unambiguously to the left. And the Democrats hope to keep it that way. So long as there's enough of a blocking coalition in Congress by the Democrats, no change of this sort is going to take place. And, you know, when you look at somebody like Joe Biden, he spends his entire life figuring out how it is that you can ignore well-established norms in the operation of various government bureaus. And to the extent that you don't have an ability to override it by both houses of Congress, subject to his veto, he manages to get his way.
All right, we have a minute left. You say that Congress can move on this. Is there any indication they want to?
Well, we don't know. There was a nice column by Hal Scott in the Wall Street Journal the other day, and he says what happens is you have to take the money out of the profits that the Federal Reserve System had. He says this year and last year there were no profits, and so you can't take any money. And so he said it's a Pyrrhic victory. If this, in fact, turns out to be true, and I hope somebody actually raises this question, then there'll be a huge need for Congress, if it wants to keep this thing in operation, to think of how it's funding, and at that point you may get some new legislation.
Professor Richard Epstein, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution, teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. speaking of a recent decision by the Supreme Court. And when we come back, the Supreme Court has passed judgment on a South Carolina case involving redistricting. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Time for a sofa upgrade? Visit washablesofas.com and discover Anabay, where designer style meets budget-friendly prices, with sofas starting at $699. Anabay brings you the ultimate in furniture innovation with a modular design that allows you to rearrange your space effortlessly. Perfect for both small and large spaces, Anabay is the only machine-washable sofa inside and out. Say goodbye to stains and messes with liquid and stain-resistant fabrics that make cleaning easy. Liquid simply slides right off. Designed for custom comfort, our high-resilience foam lets you choose between a sink and feel or a supportive memory foam blend. Plus, our pet-friendly, stain-resistant fabrics ensure your sofa stays beautiful for years. Don't compromise quality for price. Visit washablesofas.com to upgrade your living space today with no-risk returns and a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get up to 60% off plus free shipping and free returns. Shop now at washablesofas.com. Offers are subject to change and certain restrictions may apply.